The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show. I'm your host, Robin Daly, founder of Yes to Life, a UK charity helping people with cancer to understand and use integrative medicine. In today's show, I'm going to be talking to Joanna Hill. Joanna's a force to be reckoned with, and you shouldn't be fooled by her unassuming manner. She's the driving force behind the enormously impressive Bagnall Centre for Integrated Healthcare in Chesham, which is well worth a visit if you're nearby. I'm talking to Joanna today over the phone at the centre in Chesham. Joanna, thanks very much for coming on to talk about your extraordinarily impressive venture, the Bagnall Centre, 6,000 square feet of space dedicated to integrative therapies. It's been there in Chesham since 2012, and this centre really is your baby, I think, and though you speak about it modestly, it really is an amazing achievement to open and to make a going concern of such an ambitious centre. You're tucked away there, not in the centre of London, you're in Chesham. You've really given heart and soul to this. What gave and continues to give you the impetus for all of this?
Hi, Robin. Nice to speak to you again. My background, I'm an accountant and management consultant, and I used to work in the city. And my mother had breast cancer about 20 years ago, and she dealt with it entirely conventionally. She was a conventional nurse, and 5 years later, the cancer came back and could not be dealt with by conventional medicine. So at that time, I started talking to several complementary and alternative friends. I wasn't really complementary and alternative in those days. I was very much into fitness, into running and horse riding and eating healthily in order to do that. But it opened my eyes at that time to the possibility that health could be looked at a different way, much more holistically. Sadly, we lost her, but I never went back to my old ways. I went forward into being a mother to two girls and researching nutrition and its relationship to disease. And it's that has driven me to create somewhere where we can teach people not only about nutrition, but all aspects of environmental and personal factors in disease progression and reversal.
Brilliant. So I know that you personally set great store in nutritional approaches to supporting people with chronic disease, including cancer, of course. Well, why?
Very good question. I think it was fortuitous that the first major movement in alternative cancer therapy that I bumped into was the Gerson therapy. Mm. That was through a great friend of mine who knew a lady who was a part of the Gerson support group. And the more I looked into the nutritional approaches to cancer, the more I looked at other modes of treating cancer, the more it appealed to me because it is scientific. It can be proved in blood tests. It is a largely scientific approach. It was developed by a doctor, and it made sense to me as an accountant. I like things to be able to be measured and to be proven. Mm-hmm. I completely understand now, a long time later, that there is definitely as much value in many other ways of looking at cancer, the spiritual, the emotional, etc. But at that time, that was what appealed to me because that was my background.
Right.
Right. Okay, well, I want to come back to Gerson in a little while, but he's certainly an interesting fellow. So the Bagnall Centre is described as a centre for integrated health. Now, can you tell us how you see integrated healthcare, or integrated medicine, as it's also called, and why do you feel so passionately about it?
Through my own experience with my mother's cancer and with my own health, I came to realise that we have somehow become very polarised in how we look at healthcare and medicine in this country, and, well, indeed throughout the world. We've started, you know, over time with natural and holistic approaches, because there were no pharmaceutical or surgical approaches. And in time, as technology was developed and the pharmaceutical and surgical approaches became more and more prevalent, cheaper and more widespread, those have moved to the forefront of everything, to the expense of the natural and holistic healthcare approaches that have been around forever and still do work in certain situations. And instead of being all natural, we've become all technology. And I just believe that the truth lies in between. The truth lies in joining the two and using the right tools for the right job. And working together in partnership is the only way we're actually going to resolve health problems. Of course, in an acute situation, technology is the answer. There isn't time to do anything else. But in chronic conditions, it's a completely different arena. And it's there that the holistic and the natural and approaches are getting better results than the pharmaceuticals and the surgicals based on technology, because the problem is not an external pathogen or mechanical damage or something that technology is so good at dealing with. Mm-hmm. It's actually from within, and that's what the holistic approaches look at.
Mm. So that was a nice summary in a way, the right tools for the right job. That's quite a nice definition of integrative medicine in a way.
Yeah.
Mm. So a big aspect, I think, of what you're doing there at the Bagnall Centre is has to do with prevention, is keeping people healthy. Conventional medicine doesn't really have a lot on offer for prevention, other than a few sort of questionable drugs with long-term side effects. But this is really a crucial area in which integrative medicine excels, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. And last Thursday, I was at a big meeting in Buckinghamshire, which very excitingly they are finally pulling together into a single point of access to wellbeing services in Buckinghamshire across health and social care, which is very exciting. Mm. But it tends to focus on smoking and alcohol and weight. It's not as integrated or as deep as we would like in the holistic world.
No.
And I think a lot of this is to do with the fact that doctors and health professionals' training is way out of date. With the research that's out there, there's not that much research, because, of course, it's quite difficult to get anyone to pay for research into the more holistic approaches. But any training that the medical professionals have is probably 20, 30, 40 years out of date by the time you get to more senior doctors. Mm. Even if they do undertake continuing professional development, they probably don't look at anything holistic or natural unless that's something they particularly care about. They don't have much time for CPD, and I'm sure they have to concentrate on drugs because that's what they are spending a lot of their time doing. You can't change someone's lifestyle in 9 minutes.
No, indeed you can't. But interesting that nonetheless there are some moves in the right direction, even if it doesn't quite meet your hopes at this point.
It's definitely moving in the right direction, and there are new groups of doctors springing up where like-minded professionals are starting to make change happen. For example, the College of Medicine, the British Society of Lifestyle Medicine, even the sort of the offshoots of the functional medicine, although that's a very American-driven, doesn't really suit our medical system. So, yes, it is beginning to change, and perhaps as a new generation of doctors comes through, with influence from the existing doctors who are showing more interest in more holistic ways of looking at health, then, yeah, it is certainly moving. It's a question of how long it's going to take.
It's pretty glacial, isn't it? Yeah. But there's some interesting things happening there. I mean, I think the public awareness, I think, is moving quite quickly now. Would you agree with that?
Very much so. We've been open 6 years, and when we first opened, I think a lot of the things we said, people thought we were crazy. And actually now, 6 years on, they've read it in the paper so many times, read it on the internet. So on the internet, of course, has vastly increased people's bombardment with news and views on health. Some of it obviously is completely polarised. It's quite difficult to find your way through it. But I don't think anyone is shielded from it anymore, which is a good thing. And I think people are taking more responsibility on doing research into their own conditions. It can end up in a certain amount of sort of terror and fear when they self-diagnose themselves in those appalling conditions that clearly are not what's wrong with them. But I think people are beginning to take a bit more responsibility. And combined with the fact that pharmaceutical drugs just are not achieving the results that everyone hoped that they would, you know, they're still not reversing diabetes, they're still not reversing high blood pressure, they're still not reversing arthritis. Well, they won't. And I think people are beginning to realise that they're looking in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's interesting you talk about the polarisation that's on the internet. Yeah, that's been there right from day one, hasn't it? But it's also, I think people find it refreshing when they hear somebody who's prepared to talk about the right tools for the right job. A balanced view of the whole thing, which doesn't say, well, it isn't a question of this or that. It's actually, well, what's the right thing for you with this particular condition right now?
Yes.
Okay, well, my hope would be that the growth in public understanding and public pressure could actually melt the glacier a bit quicker and get things to move in the area of healthcare just by public demand.
I think you're right, Robin. I think that's already happening. The difficulty is the skill set of the medical profession, you know, in order to respond to that demand, and the availability of training, you know, the availability of services, lifestyle change services. You know, the NHS is still referring people to Slimmer's World because that's about all there is.
Right.
And there are diabetes services, but they tend to be about how to manage how much insulin you take,
right,
as opposed to giving them cookery lessons and explaining to them how to replace sugar in their diet. But one of the things that we do, we have a teaching kitchen here, and we are running courses specifically for diabetics, but it's hard to win contracts with the CCGs or with the county council, because the movement isn't yet from within them to change.
No. But the hope is that it won't be too far off. Just because, I say, people literally won't accept being told that you've got to live with this forever. And they'll just say, well, that's ridiculous. Why aren't you referring me to this place here that actually reverses it?
Yes. And that's one of the things we're going to be doing later in the year. We are actually going to be running an observational trial on taking various local people with and without diabetes, all sort of high blood sugar, and just putting them through a lifestyle change program here.
Excellent.
And watching what happens. With a particular concentration on what is it that encourages adherence to a lifestyle change routine, what is the most effective way to do it. There's been quite a lot of work done on it already, but I think in order to convince the people here, the local Buckinghamshire medical people and the social care and the county, to convince them that what we're doing actually works, we're going to have to do it ourselves.
Mm. Well, good for you. So I wanted to go back and just talk a little bit more about Gerson, because he's quite a crucial figure in the whole the arena of lifestyle medicine as a whole, I think, but obviously particularly nutritional medicine. And just for anybody who doesn't actually know anything about him, do you want to just tell us a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Well, we think of him as the founding father of nutritional therapy.
Yes.
He was a German doctor in Germany in the last century, and he had terrible migraines, and someone told him that it was to do with food, so he cut out most things and gradually reintroduce them, and it's a traditional, as you know, exclusion diet, and then you test, you exclude something for 2 weeks, then you reintroduce it to see what happens. And he found his migraines went away, and then he started treating other people for that, and other things they had wrong with them started clearing up. And he had discovered that he could reverse the degeneration that causes the body to break down by simply reversing the things that people are doing wrong. So telling people, what he did was teach people to eat fresh fruit and vegetables, not eat unhealthy fats, not eat too much salt, not eat too much sugar, not eat too many chemicals. He obviously advocated organic vegetables wherever possible. And he went on, he sort of went up the scale of ailments. People came to him with more and more serious complaints, skin tuberculosis. He cured his own daughter's bone tuberculosis, I think. And ultimately, he was approached to treat cancer, which was not what he set out to do, but it's what the Gerson therapy is best known for. And the regime is very simple. It's a lot of juicing, and if you do a lot of juicing, it releases toxins into your bloodstream, and you have to help the liver to get the toxins out, and he introduced coffee enemas into the regime in order to do that. And there is a story that coffee enemas used to be given in the Crimea when they had no other painkillers. I've never seen any proof of whether it's true, but the coffee enema was in the Merck medical manual until, I think it was 1972. Yeah. We got a copy of the entry, but then Bennett disappeared after that.
Right.
So he was a medical doctor.
Yeah.
And he did run some trials at a hospital in Austria, but it was never fully clinically trial what he did. It was all he wrote a book, 50 cases on his 50 best cases, but it was never accepted into the mainstream. By about the 50s, I think he wrote his book, but by that time the pharmaceuticals were becoming very strong.
Yes, it's hard in a way to get your head around how far ahead his thinking was, really, because we're talking about the 1920s when he was doing this
at the beginning. Yes.
Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, at that time, who was worrying about the purity of foods, and detoxing and this kind of thing? I mean, I kind of imagine he was out there on his own.
I think the only reason, yes, you're right. And there was Jensen. Bernard Jensen was a sort of juicing guru that in the States. I'm just trying to see the great names. And Anne Wigmore, the original Hippocrates teacher.
Yeah. So this was
And Norman Walker.
Oh yes, he was juicing as well. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they were, and there was this charity I worked with in Manhattan when we lived in the States called Rethinking Cancer. I think a lady called Ruth Sackman, and she used to organise conferences in the 50s with the great and the good of that world. And we have a library of the books from that charity here at the centre from that era, which are extraordinary. Mm. You know, some of them are sort of typed by hand.
Right.
But this knowledge was out there going on for 100 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it goes to show, just how long it can take for something, which is really, there's a pressure to go in another direction, largely a financial pressure. And, despite the fact this information is around, here we are, as you say, maybe nearly 100 years later, and it's beginning to become common currency now. Extraordinary, really. And, the evidence for what he was doing has continued to build all the time, isn't it? And, despite the fact this is not a profitable arena, the amount of scientific research that's now been done on nutrition as a way of reversing chronic disease is really quite impressive, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I suppose if you think about it, the cancer discussion, whether cancer can be reversed with nutrition, is like a bigger version of the fat versus sugar debate, which as we all know, was won by the wrong person in the early days, which is why we've all gone down the low-fat route to find 20 years later or 30 years later, whatever it is, probably more than that,
that it's
wrong.
Yeah.
And finally, we're all going back in the other direction, but cancer is that much bigger and that much scarier. I guess it's going to take a bit longer.
Mm. Well, in parallel, we have the whole Warburg effect, which again is from about the same time as Gerson,
where he was
recognising that there is maybe a common underpinning to all types of cancer, which is something that could be addressed directly. And, you know, that was known then, and it's been known all along, really, but nonetheless completely sidelined. And it's only now, again, beginning to gain some currency. And, of course, it does tie in very well with things like nutritional approaches. They make sense within a metabolic view of cancer.
Absolutely, yes, it does make sense. And I think that's why nutrition for me has always been what's pulled me back, because it just does all make sense scientifically.
Mm. So I imagine you, like me, are finding it very heartening to have a lifestyle guru such as Dr. Rangan Chatterjee gracing our TVs across the nation and yes. taking people off drugs and improving their lifestyle.
Yes, what a breath of fresh air he is. I just wish we could clone him.
Yeah, we could do quite a few, couldn't we? So, yeah.
And there are more like him out there. And the College of Medicine is a wonderful rallying point for the more alternative holistic practitioners who are prepared to talk to doctors and doctors who are prepared to talk to holistic practitioners. So it's a great meeting of the minds.
Mm. Yeah, very important. Okay, so back to your centre again now. What do you do? Can you tell us, you've got enormous programme of classes going on there, you have events, you have therapies, you know, what are you doing and what's most popular?
I think the classes in the clinic are roughly similar in terms of the volume of people that we look after. The exercise that we do is, we don't do anything with cardio or anything too heavy duty. It tends to be more meditative exercise, so Pilates, yoga. And then the clinic covers gosh everything through from physiotherapy, acupuncture, osteopathy, speech and language therapy, massage, the whole range right the way through from conventional through to some very holistic teachers. And then we also have the teaching kitchen, where we are teaching a lot of plant-based cookery. We're doing healthy cooking on a budget, which is happily sponsored by Bucks County Council.
Wow.
We're doing Play With Your Food, which is cookery classes for children, teaching them about texture and flavour, because I think lots of children don't get to experience that and don't get to actually play with food in terms of, you know, preparing food.
Right.
And events, yes, we have a lot of events, and that we've started the new lifestyle series with Lifestyle and Cancer in November, where we had an entire set of medical speakers talking about how lifestyle impacts cancer. And we have on June the 8th, we have Lifestyle and Diabetes, which is the same for diabetes. So very much putting forward the arguments for lifestyle being probably one of the most powerful things you can do to avoid and reverse chronic disease.
Mm. So people can come to a regular class, but they can also visit for one of these events. They can come to you for therapy as well, I believe.
Yes. We don't have any membership costs, and people just, we're more and more, we have people calling up saying, I've got a problem, this isn't going away, is there any other way that I can look at it?
Right.
And the staff on the front desk have experienced most of the therapies themselves, so they're very well qualified to help people and signpost them. But one of the big things we do encourage people to do, we do try to avoid triaging, and what we encourage people to do is to talk to different therapists.
Right.
It's very empowering for patients who are not used to being given a choice.
Mm.
And we think it's really important that they should have a personal relationship with their health professional so that they speak directly to them, several of them, hopefully, before they make a decision which one to work with.
Mm. Well, that's a really important point. As you say, I mean, choice in healthcare, they've been banging on about it for decades. It doesn't exist anywhere yet inside the health service, really. But it's sort of on the horizon. It could do soon. But, people are literally, as you say, they're not used to it. It's like a whole new world of actually being able to say, well, actually, no, that's not for me, or, you know, that really does sound like my kind of thing. And but, of course, until they know what's on the menu, they don't even know how to make a choice. So great that you're doing that and you're not just telling people what to do.
No, we found more and more that it's not one size fits all.
Mm. Right.
At all. Health isn't. We are all incredibly different. I mean, there are certain things that we all have in common. But, everybody's different. Everybody likes different things, reacts to different things, likes and dislikes. It's just like, if you think about different types of yoga, for example, some people love the chanting and the more spiritual, and some people like their yoga to be much more like dance or Pilates or something. So, you know, even within yoga, you have a huge variation of themes.
Yes.
And, you know, holistic therapy is even more so.
Hmm. On the other hand, there's so much stuff around, in a way, there's so much out there that people could do, that some people do find it a bit daunting when they actually don't know much about
yeah.
the territory themselves, you know.
Yeah, so I suppose that's probably what the girls here do is ask people to try and articulate what they like, and then they help to signpost them.
Right.
But it's making people think about their own likes and dislikes, and it's getting back in touch with how they are feeling, which we're all completely out of touch with.
Right. Very important. Okay, so you mentioned that you have a very cancer-specific event that you'd had there. I'm interested, of course, this is a program about integrative medicine for cancer, so I'm very interested in those, about the kind of things you've done and, of course, what you might be planning to do.
Yeah, so we did lifestyle and cancer first because, like yourself, it is my passion, cancer and nutrition specifically.
Yes.
But because I suppose what the centre has become over time, we talk more and more about lifestyle change.
Yes.
And that applies across the board. So we have diabetes next month, and then the next one is going to be mental health. And I think included within that, we're going to have children's behaviour and performance. But we are thinking of rerunning the lifestyle and cancer possibly in October.
Okay.
We are definitely, we've got a date put aside at the moment. We're just deciding which one to run then. Because having done all the work and collected all of the speakers and delivered our first one, it would be nice to do it a second time before we move on to something else.
Right. And
I suppose it could even become an annual event.
I was going to say, it sounds like it could be the beginnings of one. Yeah, so, and what kind of speakers do you have in an event like that?
Well, one of our major speakers, you have yourself at your own events, Professor Robert Thomas, who's been hugely supportive. He's spoken at the centre many times. He's speaking at the diabetes conference as well, because he's just written a paper on sugar cancer and diabetes, which is linking all three together, which is amazing.
That's what doesn't happen in medicine, eh? Jumping out of your compartment and...
Amazing, yeah. Absolutely, and I think that's far more exciting than having an endocrinologist speaking. To have an oncologist speaking at a diabetes conference is, you know, very exciting, I think.
Good for him.
We also have a consultant psychologist speaking. He's spoken at both of them, and we have several GPs. We focus a lot on general practice because lifestyle change is really about general practice.
Right.
So we have a mixture of, you know, of the specialist and the generalist speaking, and that this one we're actually adding in a few more holistic practitioners talking about exercise and hypnotherapy as change mechanisms in general practice and life coaching.
But it's so, nice you're living up to the label on the tin, as they say, by having health service practitioners talking to people alongside holistic practitioners.
Yes, we have to be a little bit careful which ones we choose.
Of course.
But it's a good starting point.
Yeah, no, it's very important, isn't it? I mean, you know, that of course, whatever you say about the shortage of people who have the right kind of views, or at least the shortage of people who are prepared to talk about it, they are out there, and it's very important that we support them in what they're doing because they're pioneers. And how else is change going to happen other than getting those people out there talking to the public?
Yes, and I'm hoping that we have a GP panel at this one, which we didn't have at the cancer conference because it was a bit more specialist. We had a top gynae surgeon from the Marsden at the cancer conference. But this one we have a GP panel, and one of the things we're going to be looking at is how to save your practice money by describing lifestyle change. And we have Kayla Sadra, who is... a GP from Berkshire, who is an award-winning diabetes specialist within his general practice, and that he achieved the biggest drop in blood sugar ever recorded through lifestyle change recently.
You mean on an individual basis or on a group of people or across his whole
practice? Individual, an individual.
Yeah,
right. I can't remember what the exact numbers were, but he has the lowest diabetes drug budget in the country.
Does he? How about that, eh? Well, he sounds like
so we're hoping to catch the imagination of all the local GPs.
Great.
With saving money.
I think it's, you know what you pointed to about the fact that GPs are people to be involved because we're talking about lifestyle change. I think this is really rather exciting. And of course, Dr. Rangan Chatterjee has been leading the charge in a way, re-inspiring yeah. GPs to sort of, it's almost like a new role they have. You know, their role used to be the 8-minute appointment with the, you know, write out the prescription. But I think they're getting inspired to see that actually they could be doing something else, which is of far more benefit to their patients. And it's actually very inspiring for them because they actually see these fantastic results.
Yeah, Kader Sadra actually went out and bought blood sugar monitors and strapped them on his patients. And he made them eat different things. And the thing feeds back to a software
really?
That produces graphs.
Brilliant.
So he could actually show them minute by minute, day by day, what the impact on their blood sugar was of the things that they were eating.
Right.
You know, it's not a very wealthy practice, and so there was no other interventions other than him, but he is achieving amazing results.
Mm. Wow,
yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
Okay, so can I talk a little bit about who comes along to your centre now? What kind of people are you attracting?
I think our typical client's probably 35 to 55, maybe 60, largely ladies, usually
yes.
I think 80-20, if not more, distribution. Tends to be with slightly older children, and I think it's probably a lot to do with the fact that these sort of chronic conditions start creeping in your 40s and 50s, and people are starting to experience high blood pressure, high blood sugar, arthritis, the impact of too much stress for too long, not sleeping, all of those things. As you probably know, most people in their 50s, I think the average is 4 drugs they're taking.
Yes.
As if it's some sort of inevitability.
I know, it's normal.
It isn't. It's not at all. We don't have to take drugs at all. We just need to look after ourselves better. And I think, you know, it's like your teeth start falling to bits in your 40s. I think that's just when it all starts coming home to roost. So probably when your children are a little bit older and you've got time to breathe and actually start looking after yourself a bit better. That's why I think that's our typical client.
Mm-hmm. And in amongst those, do you have quite a few cancer patients?
Not as many as I would like, but you probably know from your work that one has to be very careful what one says about cancer. So we can say we can support people with cancer with nutrition and other therapies. But the doctors don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very, very self-referred if people come to us.
Right.
A lot of the other things that we do, the doctors are fully happy to support. But I think in cancer, people are not signposted towards anything holistic. I think they'd rather put on the conveyor belt through the National Health Service because there's time threats and, you know, it is so serious. And then when they get off the conveyor belt the other end, that's when they might start to look for something themselves. But I think because people are very ill, they haven't got the energy or the enthusiasm, unless they're absolutely exceptional, to start looking outside of the conventional world.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, again, very hearteningly, I did go to a workshop last week with the, it was a combined event between Buckinghamshire County and the CCGs and Macmillan, looking at cancer and beyond and how to join things up a bit more. Not necessarily holistic care, but trying to look at something more comprehensive, a bit like the lifestyle change thing that I talked about earlier, where they're just trying to pull everything together into one coherent body. And I think the fact that I was invited to go along
is
really, really important
yes.
for both of those.
Yes. That's really good. Yeah, I mean, Macmillan have kind of picked out the banner for the patient who's finished treatment in the last couple of years, haven't they? And the recognition that actually people may be alive, but they may not be having much for life is really out there a lot more. So, I think that is enabling things like you just described to happen. The one thing you said there, the 80-20 mix of women to men, this is something I wrote about a few days ago in a recent blog post, and it's like I still find it's a bit of a tragedy that that's the case, both on from the point of view of people who need the support and also from the point of view of the practitioners as well, the people who are actually doing it, because men have a lot to bring to the arena. You have any thoughts on this about what we could do to change things?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were just talking about it earlier on. Hearteningly, we find more and more men are coming to classes and yoga classes, I think.
Good.
And to the osteopath, to the chiropractor. So it tends to be sports, stroke, exercise, stroke, injury related. We don't see many coming for sort of preventative other than that, or spiritual, emotional, that sort of thing. And it is something that one of the teachers here is talking about putting on men-only classes because she feels that they're more likely to come.
I see. Right. Well, that's probably a good idea, yeah. I mean, it's worth
trying. It's not a good idea. I think it's a shame, but I can understand it. I think that's fine. And I think once they come here and they see what else we do, then it's a smaller step to make towards looking at other areas of well-being. But I think, you know, traditionally, men grin and bear it, don't they, until they can't bear it anymore. It's probably too late.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's why it's so tragic. And I'm interested to know, you know, any ideas for what we can do to move on, really, because ability to care and to allow yourself to be cared for are, you know, the absence of that is a great loss to the world generally.
Yeah, it's interesting. We are considering having a men's health day, actually. It's one of the things that's been put on the back burner while we've been worrying about the conference, but we were seriously thinking about having a men's health day.
Sounds good.
Where we could advertise a bit more what we do, and maybe they wouldn't feel so threatened being here on their own. I don't know. I think men and women just are wired differently, and it does take longer for a man to ask for help than it does. We mums are used to asking people for help all the time. And we have something we are doing here, actually, which I think will help, is we're working with some of the small local companies and putting on a yoga class or a mindfulness class for all of their staff. And thinking about it, those classes probably have more men in them than most of our other classes.
Right. Okay, so that's a new doorway.
Perhaps the corporate well-being, getting the employer behind us, behind the whole thing, is what's going to move things in that direction.
All right. Well, I wanted to just talk about the NHS briefly, generally. You know, how you're finding, I mean, you've mentioned a few ways in which the NHS is beginning to recognise that you're offering a service, which is a benefit to the area there. Just how are you finding attitudes generally amongst people in the NHS that you're talking to? Any great ideas you've got for moving the agenda on more quickly?
We don't have great access to specialists. So it's mainly general practices that we get involved with. And I started doing some work with the CCG, the commissioning group, a volunteer project looking at patient outcomes, which has been useful. I think it's very hard to, they have so little time to look at different approaches. We are hoping to expand, to put on some continuing medical education for the general practitioners locally. The key is getting them to open their minds to it. And I suppose that's what our conferences are about, but my feeling is probably this saving practices money is what's going to change it in the end, because they cannot go on with the spiralling drug costs and surgery costs, and of course scan costs as well.
Well, it's certainly a new way to approach the problem. The changes that you're pressing for have got so many benefits, and yes, finances is certainly going to be one of them at the end of the day. So whatever works really in terms of encouraging change, the benefits will be there whichever way we persuade them to do it.
I'm afraid to say I'm an accountant, Robin.
Okay, well, look, we're just about out of time, so I just wanted to ask you, I mean, you're clearly a woman on a mission. What else do you want to achieve that you haven't already achieved?
Ah, well, this is really exciting. One of the goals that I originally had was to set up a nutritional training institution within the medical school network, because until there is such a place which junior doctors can circulate through, they're not going to understand how powerful it is. Lifestyle change and tinkering away is great, but actually reversing disease is a whole other ball game, as yes. Max Gerson found out. That's still something I'd like to do, but I think that's still quite in the long term. But sooner than that, more recently, I decided that we're going to create a retreat, but it's not going to be a retreat in the sense of going to Spain and sitting in the sun and meditating, because you can't really take that home with you. We're going to create a retreat locally to here, mm-hmm. Where people can just step outside of their lives a bit and learn different ways of looking at sort of living life more simply, get back to basics, you know, healthy food, walking in the Chilterns, maybe work in the garden. I don't know, do things that are much more basic, but much more looking at life in a much more meditative fashion, mm-hmm. and no phones, no computers.
Okay. And what sort of length retreat are you talking about?
Good question. I don't know, anything from a day to a week to a month, depending on what somebody wants to do.
Different things with different people.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Just creating an environment where people can learn to do things differently. Mm. But I think we have to start small.
Yeah. Well, very much needed, though. Great idea. All right. Well, look, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much for telling us about all your inspiring work there. I can only wish you continued and even greater success.
Thank you very much, Robin. It's lovely talking to you.
Do take a look at the Bagnall Centre website, that's bagnallcentre.com, to find out more about their programmes, events and the therapies available. You can also look on the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the show logo on the homepage to find links to resources relevant to the show today. If you'd like to support the work of Yes to Life and get fit, take a look at yestolife10k.org, that's yestolife10k.org, and think about signing up for our run on the 6th of October. That's all for today. Next week, I shall be speaking to another woman who has changed the face of healthcare, Sarah Davenport. So I hope you'll be able to join me again. Goodbye.